Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
I'm Brian Tetta, executive producer of The View. It's Monday, and I'm here with Alyssa Farah Griffin. This is Behind the Table. All right. Happy Monday, Alyssa. How are you?
Happy Monday, Brian. Oh, I'm good. It's been a journey this Monday.
We had a dramatic moment in the Hot Topics meeting where we were worried you were going to be tried for treason.
Okay, so for the folks at home,
I'm unfairly tried for treason. Let me be clear. Yes.
I'm noticing I'm getting tagged in things on Twitter, so I pull it up, and Lev Parnas, who was a former associate of Rudy Giuliani, went to jail for some of his involvement with him, and then ultimately kind of testified against him in things related to Joe Biden, tweets out this message with text from 2019 from Alyssa F. And so people are tagging me, they're tagging The View, they're tagging ABC, like, Alyssa Farah was coordinating a meeting in Ukraine, in Kyiv, for like, and you couldn't even, I couldn't frankly put together what exactly was happening. All I knew was, I've never met or texted Lev Parnas. I never coordinated any meetings in Ukraine. And I was like, shoot. So I spiral. Like, you politely allowed me to step out of the meeting.
To be clear, I believed you 100%, but I was still very nervous in
that
moment.
It's also like you have to get ahead of it, because even if the facts are on your side in this media environment, you know you have to put the kibosh on it quickly. And background, I had been involved in 2019 as well in an impersonation scandal. Somebody had been saying they were me and reaching out to members of Congress. And it got so bad that the FBI investigated it, Secret Service did, and Capitol Police did. And they never quite got to the bottom of what it was, but it was reported at the time. And I was glad it had been, because if I wanted there to be like a marker for the public if anyone ever sent something saying they were from me. So my first instinct is, this is happening again. Turns out, as I'm freaking out, trying to call every reporter I know and be like, this isn't me, this isn't me, Olivia Troy, who famously spoke out against Trump after COVID and was Pence's Homeland Security advisor, sees it and is like, hey, I know Lev, and I'm going to reach out to have him clarify that this isn't you, which he did, which was very kind. And he noted it was apparently a Sean Hannity producer who's also named Alyssa F. Mm-hmm. So to clarify, was not me.
Yes.
But there was this brief moment where I was like, man, before 9 a.m., people are like accusing me of like treason against the United States.
And to be also clear, we're not accusing anyone else of treason.
Correct.
We don't know what exactly was happening there. But I was just very, just anything about you arranging meetings
with
Sean Hannity and Ukraine,
the whole thing.
Yeah, I had a small...
That was one of those, like, I do not need my name in whatever this chaos is.
No.
So luckily, all cleared up, but great way to start the morning. Didn't even need coffee. Was wide awakened by that.
Yeah, you and me both. All right. Well, so jumping from that to other misunderstandings, on Friday, we learned that Princess Kate had cancer, and that's why she's been away from the spotlight. And it's all, our hearts go out to her, of course, and to her family. And, you know, I've had cancer in my family, and it's just, there's nothing harder than dealing with a diagnosis and having a loved one go through it. We all spent weeks speculating about what could be going on, and you said today that you felt guilt that you played into it.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything else you want to say about that?
Yeah, I do. When the news came out on Friday, I immediately felt just super convicted that I was like, shoot, I fell into the trap. Now, I never would have amplified some of the conspiracy theories and the rumors, but I did get on the train of like, where is Kate? Why do we not know anything? And, you know, kind of some of the silliness. And as soon as I saw that video, it made me think of a very close friend of ours is currently battling cancer. He's in his early 30s, like seeing he and his wife go through it and how it just upended their lives. I'm like, that's like the worst thing you could just drop on a young family. And it made me think, like, listen, public figures, you don't get the same, you know, you don't get the same level of privacy. You don't get to handle things the way that a private citizen does. But it was such a lesson of wait for the facts to play out. Because what we did know that there was an illness involved. That was one of the facts that was one of the only facts that was kind of consistent throughout.
Right.
I do fundamentally believe that the palace mishandled the PR of it, and it put her in a bad position because I remember this from my time in the White House or in Congress when I kind of worked in crisis communications. The first thing you want to do is do no harm. So if you put out any information that raises more questions than it gives answers, that's a problem. I think Sarah Haynes was right to point out that the photo made it a bigger story than it needed to be.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just a reminder that it's like, You can ask questions. You can talk about legitimate stories, like which we did. I think we were responsible in how we handled it. It was more my specific words. I felt like I made light of it because it was absolutely legitimate to cover the photo and the edits there and the right. lack of meeting editorial standards. It's more when it goes into this dark place where people suddenly think everything in her life is fodder and potential gossip to bring up.
I think the photo altering, the admitted photo altering, made it a mystery that people wanted to find an answer to. And that led people down rabbit holes and into silliness, which I was guilty of here, too. Of course, you know, and in every conversation we had, we prefaced it like, you know, we hope she's OK. We hope everything's wrong. But I still think we got carried away.
Well, and I mean, the honest truth, too, is there is so much mystery and mystique around the royal family. And I said on the podcast, like, we all remember what Diana went through and the things that we learned after the fact about sort of her treatment. And then I read Spare, I read Harry's book, and I've watched the interviews of sort of their experience. So I think there's a legitimate place that people come from of they love Princess Kate. And it felt like, oh, no, we've heard too many heartbreaking things about women in this family already, mm-hmm. wanting to know where she was. But there's a place where you can have concern and you could talk about concern and legitimate things. And then there's going too far and kind of playing into the social media mob of it.
Right. Well, we definitely our hearts do sincerely go out to them, and mm-hmm. we hope she'll be OK.
Yeah.
And I'm optimistic she will, but I really hope so. Now, I mean, you talk about this because you, having been on the PR side of things, have kind of a unique insight into mm-hmm. it. You were working at the White House during the pandemic when it was announced that then President Trump tested positive for COVID-19 and was going to be hospitalized. What was that experience like? Do you see parallels to that kind of as far as like the need to notify people and everything else? Or
well, it got me thinking about it. So I see them as different. A head of state who's the actual like functional leader
as opposed to a
is different
figurehead.
Than more of a figurehead. Like
yes.
if this was the prime minister, we would absolutely have a right to know mm-hmm. how serious, when was he hospitalized, did he miss security briefings, that kind of thing, because there's implications for the public. But that was one of the wildest days of my life, was the day that, well, the night before Trump had announced he tested positive. I was home. I was physically at the White House when that took place. And so the next morning, we're all kind of just waiting around to get more information. We're not hearing much from the chief of staff. I hadn't spoken to his doctor at that point. And I remember sitting in the press secretary's office with a few of our staff and saying, like, you know, we are going to need to give an update to the public because they're rightly concerned. But like, let's wait till we get more info. And full circle, because we're talking about Kristen Welker today of NBC. She'd come into my office all the time. She was covering the White House. And she knocks on my door and she's like, hey, she's like, I want the timeline of when he first tested positive. And I said, let me work on that. I don't have the info, but I'll go get it from the chief of staff. I go to Mark Meadows and Dr. Connolly, his physician, and said, hey, when did he first test positive? And Mark Meadows directly said, I'm not going to get into timelines. And I said, well, I think this would be helpful. Like, you know, Kristen Welker is like a dog with a bone. She's not going to stop asking. Then Maggie Haberman from the New York Times started asking, too. And that was the line he gave me. And it didn't. It should have set off an alarm in my head at that moment, but it didn't.
Mm-hmm.
That day was wild. He later, Dr. Connolly and Tony Ornato, I have issues with him, basically told Kaylee and I that the president was far worse than we realized, that they were encouraging him to go to Walter Reed as a precaution, even though the White House does have basically a fully functioning sort of hospital there. It doesn't have emergency interventions, but like he was on something to help him breathe in the residence at the White House. And they ultimately convinced him to go to Walter Reed by saying, go now while you could walk out so you're not taken out on a gurney, because right. obviously the press would get that shot. And I remember I stood outside to watch him do the walk from the residence onto Marine One. And it's like ingrained in my mind because he was very sick. And after that, he goes to Walter Reed, and I huddled up with some of the senior staff and I said, this is a moment that we can pivot and take this more seriously and show that, you know, he is a senior citizen. He is somebody who got a very severe case of it and had to be hospitalized. Now is a time he can reach people by being like, this is serious. We are going to get through it. We need to be masking. We need to be doing these protocols and interventions. And everyone was at least said they were on board. And then he comes back, takes off the mask, waves from the balcony. He does the ride around with Secret Service. And It was one of those moments. It's like where, you know, he just can't help himself. But the story gets wilder. And sorry to tell a long story. Years later, probably two years later, Mark Meadows comes out with his book, The Chief's Chief, or something like that. And he writes in the book that Donald Trump tested positive for COVID before his first debate with Joe Biden, which he withheld from staff, the public, me who spoke to press and did not have that information. So it compromised me. Mm-hmm. And it means that he put the president on a debate stage next to Joe Biden, you know, in close proximity while he was COVID positive. He also did a fundraiser while he was. I mean, just the level of recklessness.
The prep with Chris Christie that we famously have talked about.
Yeah, with Chris Christie where he got very ill from it. And that to me, there's so many moments where I think of people around him who didn't serve him well and didn't serve the country well, of like that Meadows didn't even think that that was like when he wrote that in his book, like maybe this isn't something I should admit at this point. Like he thought, oh, yeah, that's fine. We just take a COVID test. It was positive. And then allegedly there was a negative one. It was just it was unbelievable to me from top to bottom. And had I known, because in retrospect, I think Kristen Welker wondered and I think she kind of understood. He just did a debate. He just did this event. When did this first happen?
Sure.
Public figures have a duty to the public, but people who are actually in true leadership elected roles have far more than somebody like the Princess of Wales, who's is more of a figurehead.
Right. So that's a different situation than someone like the President of the United States, where you really just need transparency.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or in the Secretary of Defense, we had talked about that as well.
We talked about that too. Right. Yeah. No, of course. We'll be back in a moment.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
All right. Well, following up with something else we talked about on the show today, after NBC hired former RNC chair Ronna McDaniel, Chuck Todd criticized his own network on Meet the Press yesterday. On the show today, you stressed the need for Republican voices, but then said there are credible Republicans who never dabbled in election denialism. Mm-hmm. What struck you the most about this story?
I was very surprised to see that she was hired at a network. And I think it's more because we know this at ABC. We have certain editorial standards. I know NBC does. It's an important news network. And among our editorial standards, like I give credit to you, we don't have on people who denied the election results. We don't platform them on our show. We don't have contributors who have. And this is it matters because right now it's something like more than 67% of Republicans don't believe Joe Biden legitimately won. So lies that Ronna McDaniel played a big role in amplifying and giving permission to while she was at the RNC have direct impacts on the American public and our discourse. I always actually really liked Ronna when I worked with her. I can think of a number of times that she was a more moderating voice to the former president. But she had this moment that all of us in Trump world faced after he lost of like, are we going to tell the truth and acknowledge that Joe Biden legitimately won? Or are we going to go down this rabbit hole of conspiracy and sowing doubt and distrust in our institutions? And I was the first senior White House official to acknowledge that, to say that Biden won, to directly say it and congratulate my predecessor who'd been announced, Kate Bedingfield, who I've since become friends with. And certainly I was the first on January 6th to say he lost. This is wrong. He should be removed from office if he doesn't have the dignity to resign. And I just think life is a series of moments for choosing. And there are people who can speak to half this country, and they could talk about the policies we care about, the border, the economy, addressing crime, you know, the things that are top issues for Republicans, but who've been honest with Republicans and the rest of the American public. And it was a little it was disappointing to me that they thought that was the person to go with, because I know she's known better throughout this. And I think she's trying to, you know, kind of reposition now. But it's like the damage is already done.
Well, it's something I dealt with when we were looking to fill your seat, to be honest with you. We did a year of auditions with different conservative voices. And I don't know that I could say that every single person we met with has not had a moment where they have been 100% factual about the election and everything else. But at the time, I thought I was putting on people, and I set out to, with guidance from the network as well, to make sure that we were looking for a strong conservative voice, but someone that wasn't going to be an election denier and someone who wasn't going to give disinformation. That was really important to me. We did quite well in choosing you. But but it was hard. It was hard to find people that were strong voices that represented a real part of the Republican world, that had an understanding of it, that had a knowledge of it, and could speak to why Republican voters are voting on different issues, but also didn't just say, you know, Jan 6 didn't happen, or that Biden didn't win the election genuinely, or several other disinformation talking points. I try to keep that going with guests, too.
Yeah.
I mean, we've had people on that have walked that line, like Ted Cruz isn't quite an election denier, but
he'll definitely raise some doubts.
Yeah. So, you know, things like that. It's a difficult conversation. And I have to say, it's always a case by case.
Well, and I just think, like, listen, it's a smaller number of Republicans than it should be who have been honest about the election, but they are out there. And, like, you know, Chris Christie was with ABC for some time. I think of someone like Will Hurd. I think of Sarah Matthews, who worked under me in the White House and has been honest. And these are conservatives through and through who can talk about what Republicans care about, what issues are going to matter in the election, but without that other side of having fed into this really kind of destructive
moment. I don't know if he's answered the question in a long time now, but Tim Scott was on and he had not been saying that Biden lost the election, and now that he's completely in Trump's camp.
Well, and by the way, I on another network had been on a panel with a lawmaker, Byron Donalds, who started to espouse some of the, you know, or actually he wasn't even talking about the election, but he was saying some things that I knew not to be quite true. And I interjected to ask, like, do you believe Joe Biden legitimately won? And he tried to frame it as like, oh, look at this gotcha moment. And I wasn't asking because I had some interest in relitigating 2020, but it was to know if I'm speaking with an honest broker who's speaking in facts, because we're an opinion show. You can have different opinions, but you can't have different facts. And that's also where I think they're going to run into challenges here is it's you have all the opinions you want. My beliefs are very different than, say, Sonny Hostin's, but, like, we have to have the same facts at the table.
Right. And if you guys have a disagreement or a correction for each other, you have no problem giving it to each other. No, that's fine. But you're right. It's about people operating in good faith, talking about things that they truly believe, and then making sure that those things can be backed up factually. Mm-hmm. It's a very difficult thing. I feel very lucky that we found you.
Well, thank you.
All right. So we have a listener text from Patty in Connecticut. She says, as a moderate Republican, I especially love hearing Alyssa's take on what's happening in politics today. Alyssa, what is it about Republican ideology that led you to becoming a Republican?
I love that question, Patty. You know what? For me, I felt like I think the biggest draw was that when I got into Republican politics, we were the party of freedom, personal responsibility, individual liberty, but also we wanted to be tough on things like border security, crime, and also American leadership abroad are kind of fundamental things to me that have drawn me to the party. One of the things that I always am vocal about now in this sort of shift pivot moment of the party is we have to be consistent. Like, you can't say you're the party of limited government and individual freedom, but then not want to protect individual freedoms. So I think about that on whether it's LGBTQ issues or even some of the positions on abortion. I am personally pro-life. I've been outspoken on that, but we live in a big, beautiful, diverse country of 300 million people where more than 50% of the country sees it differently. So there is a way that you can compromise what somebody's personal right is and their individual freedom and meet in the middle on, you know, highly contentious policies like that. But I really liked the it was kind of the old message. It was even pre-Paul Ryan, but I think of we wanted to be the party that let you dream the American dream and gave you the best opportunity to do that. And it's not about the government giving you resources. It's just about getting out of the way so that people can pursue what they want in their lives. I worry we're straying from it. I'm pretty clear that I don't like the direction the party's going. But I think that that core sort of party of growth and opportunity is something that we could come back to in a post-Trump era.
So your hopes and dreams here are that Trump doesn't – that this Trump election is a failure.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the ashes of that –
yes. And handicapping today, if the election were today, I think Trump would win.
Mm-hmm.
I think 8 months is a long time. And my gut tells me the more voters see of Trump and are reminded of him, Joe Biden will sweep the popular vote and narrowly win the Electoral College. That's what I think. But who knows? It could easily go either direction. There are simply more Americans who don't like Trump than do like Trump, but we have a complicated electoral system. My hope is that he loses, and it's a moment of reckoning that we are not a majority party. When you say things like, I don't want Nikki Haley voters, he was even saying he doesn't want Ron DeSantis voters. Like, how narrow are you making the tent? But we don't want old Reagan Republicans. We want Tucker Carlson Republicans. I mean, that's a 30% party, if even. That's not, you're losing people who have been in this movement their whole life like me, who've worked in Republican politics their whole life. And I think I'm confident that wake-up moment will come. I just think we're going to have to go through a little more pain before it does.
Well, hopefully not too much.
Yeah.
All right, another question. This one's from Leah. I am a retired newspaper reporter, and I'm concerned about the disappearance of local community news. What can we do to encourage local news people can use?
That's such a good question, one I care a lot about. My mom's a local journalist in California and has spent her life covering it's important stories in the Sacramento region. So the first thing is it's hard to compete financially for local news in this environment. So I think you need to express that there's an appetite for it. Buy local news if it still exists, read it, subscribe to it. But I do think it's one of the most important things for our country and our democracy. And I think of this kind of incredible story here locally, like George Santos winning. So the local Long Island paper had written about him and his history of fraud and some of his misdealings and concerns over him. And unfortunately, I think people were paying more attention to their national media rather than something that impacts them way more.
That's
this
right.
Local story. And he ended up winning. It was such a lesson of like the issues that matter the most to you directly are almost always state and local issues. And I think you just have to like speak up, amplify and encourage and support your local press, because that's where the change happens. And by the way, it was Killer Mike, but I keep coming back to it. One of my favorite guests we've had on the show. I agree with him so fundamentally that local politics matters the most. It's going to affect your family more directly than the national politics. So being engaged there is huge.
All right. I couldn't leave here without doing a little bit of Bravo with you, as always. So let's switch gears. The Valley premiered last week, which is a spinoff of Vanderpump Rules, starring Jax Taylor and his wife, Brittany. I heard you found it a little cringy.
Yes, and I'm hoping it gets better because mm-hmm. Bravo really never misses. Okay, so my take on Bravo is a show should be one of two things, aspirational or relatable. So The Real Housewives, I watch because I'm like, look at that Birkin bag I would never be able to afford or spend money to do. Look at this amazing house. Look at the fashion. Or Vanderpump, which is been a hit for all these years because you were coming up with these beautiful young people who are just starting their careers.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like they were kind of the starving artists or whatever. What I don't get is the sort of like these people are roughly my age, maybe a little bit older. Their lives they seem really a little bit miserable. Like the men are very unappealing and they're not very nice to the women. Everyone seems unhappy in their marriage and they seem like maybe a bit stagnant in life. And I love like Kristen Doty from Vanderpump back in the day, so maybe she can salvage it. But it gave like the worst thing that you hear about with your friends and their marriages and lives. I don't need to watch that on TV. Like it felt a little, I don't know. It felt like not something it didn't feel like escapism.
Right, right, right.
I'll put it that way. And like not, you always need, there's always going to be villains in reality TV, but you also need heroes. And I was like struggling to find who I should be rooting for in it.
All right. Well, we'll give it time though.
Yeah. Listen, Andy never misses, so we'll see.
Yeah, I have faith that they'll come around for you. Usually find what you're looking for on Bravo, so hopefully it'll be there. All right, well, thank you for joining me, Alyssa. Tomorrow, I'll be back with Sarah Haynes, as Joy puts it, the Thelma to your Louise. In the meantime, if you have a question or want advice from me or a co-host, check the episode description for the number to our Behind the Table hotline. Thank you for listening, and have a great day.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.